Hello, I'm Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
And I'm Troy.
And we are
Mega City Film Club.
All right.
And we're back with another Film Club episode, and it's a warm welcome to Troy Martin, who joins the list of book clubbers who've suggested some films for us to link to 2000 AD and possibly other British comics. Troy, welcome to the Film Club now.
Yes, thank you for inviting me back, and it's a pleasure to be here. And it's a pleasure to meet Conrad as well.
Yeah, all right, good to meet you too, Troy. Exciting times, we're watching movies!
Yep.
As people know, we've now got our two strands of Film Club, and this is the particularly interesting one, where we get to go back and look at some old films and link them to comics, which is great fun, particularly as some of the comic book movies of 2024, they're not lighting us on fire yet, are they, Conrad?
And, like, there's just big gaps.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think it was Madam Web has come out in February. And I think our next one isn't Deadpool until, like, June or something like that. So very in a fallow period of comic book films. And, a terrifying one as well, honestly. But we'll see. We'll see. It'll be fine.
Okay. I should say we have seen Madam Web, but we were looking for something to pair it with. We do have thoughts, but we'll get back to that in another episode. So, instead, Troy has suggested two films, both with a sort of link to 2000 AD. Let us kick off by turning to Conrad in his inimitable fashion to announce...
Film One, Runaway.
So, this is the lesser known of our two films from 1984, written and directed by Michael Crichton of Jurassic Park and ER fame, starring... Tom Selleck, Gene Simmons, Cynthia Rhodes, and Kirstie Alley. Bit of a box office flop, this one. Did not make its money back at all. Troy, this is a film that possibly people haven't seen, because by the sounds of it, not many people did see this movie. Give us the setup. Tell us a little bit about the film and why you chose it.
Okay, so I chose this film because I think, as I said to you at the time, it feels... It's kind of 2000 AD adjacent. So rather than being a film that influenced 2000 AD, it feels like it just sits alongside it. And when you watch it, and certainly when I watched it as a kid, it seemed almost incomprehensible to me that the filmmakers hadn't ever read 2000 AD, because there's so many elements in this film that were recognisable to me from the comics. So the film's Runaway. The basic premise is Tom Selleck plays Ramsey. He's a cop who hunts errant or rogue robots. So he's essentially a robo-hunter. He gets a new sidekick, a new partner, who is a blonde bombshell. So, you know, maybe a little bit of a Judge Anderson reference there. And the bad guy is played by Gene Simmons, bizarrely, of rock star Kiss fame. And actually a similar role to one that he played in another film around the same sort of time that had, or maybe just a few years later, that had Rutger Hauer in it. And I've forgotten the name of the film, but it's almost identical performance. But he's actually quite a highlight of the film, I think. He's very good in it, I thought.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, Conrad, Gene Simmons playing a brilliant bad guy for a movie, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he's great. Like, I had not seen this film before. I'll admit, but I was talking to some of my friends, at least one of my friends, who's basically said that, like, this is one of his favorite movies, and sort of you know, buys it and all that when it comes out in all the different formats and stuff like that. And I think Gene Simmons is honestly one of, if not the best part of this movie. He's just, I describe his performance as being like somehow both understated and also eating every piece of scenery on the film, you know, because like, he's like quiet and dark, but like constantly in that, they call it like a Kubrick face, like where you kind of like, you look down and then look up from under your brows, you know, it's very menacing. And like, you know, just is clearly having a great time, just like being the most evil guy possible, killing everybody, threatening everything with, like, you know, crazy robots and stuff like that.
So this was the first time for you, Conrad. I'd seen this on VHS way back in the day and then rewatched it more recently. Troy, what was your experience? When did you first come across the film?
Well, I went to see it because you're right. I don't think it got a national release. And my local playhouse used to have like special matinees. They would pick films that weren't on general release and put them on for a week. And my dad took me to see this. I think it was my 13th birthday because I grew up as a massive fan of Magnum PI. I absolutely loved pretty much anything that Tom Selleck was in. So he took me to see that on my birthday and I absolutely loved it. It's got kind of it feels almost like a TV movie rather than a very cinematic film. So it probably went pretty much straight to VHS, but it is fun. And yeah, there's so many elements in it that I think anyone who's read 2000 AD would probably enjoy the film for what it is, but spot the reference.
So I remember, the only thing I remembered about this film, strangely enough, was the moment when Gene Simmons is seen on a doorbell camera, which of course seemed incredibly high tech at the time, but now it seems commonplace. And just looked, you just see him, as you say, Conrad, doing that Kubrick face, looking up at the doorbell camera and looking incredibly sinister doing so. And that was all I remembered about this film. So Gene Simmons is a standout. Tom Selleck, we were talking about before we recorded, a great TV career, tried to make it in movies, but never seemed to get, I don't think, did he ever get a real big hit?
No, I think the closest was Quigley Down Under, and I'm not sure that was necessarily did big box office. Obviously, most listeners are probably aware that he turned down Indiana Jones because he was busy filming Magnum. So that either could have made his movie career or destroyed, based on Tom Selleck's kind of reputation with movies, it might have just destroyed Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't think so. I think he would have been good in that role. I think he's good in the role in this film for, he makes the most of what he's got here. I think with regards to his movie career, I don't know, maybe he should have just doubled down on the romantic lead.
He was getting like Three Men and a Baby and stuff like that. And I think that was sort of your big,
big hits, wasn't it? Yes.
Big hit. Well, that sort of also, with the other dudes from that and stuff like that, Ted Danson as well, stuff like that.
Yeah, so that was a pretty big hit. But I think that would have probably been a niche that he could have exploited. But he obviously wanted to do slightly more serious roles and it just didn't pay off for him.
I'll just mention the two female sort of leads, Cynthia Rhodes and Kirstie Alley. Kirstie Alley sort of playing Gene Simmons's Dr. Luther's girlfriend, who's involved in some of the industrial espionage for him. Cynthia Rhodes gets a raw deal playing the new partner. Certainly looks glamorous enough, but she was a bit of a non-entity in this film, I thought.
Yeah, she's just kind of like there to like fall over and get rescued by Tom Selleck and then, swoon in his presence. It's also, I thought, a curious decision by, like a design decision that all the female police officers in this wear like pencil skirts and high heels, even when they're on duty. Like maybe if they're doing, administrative work around the office, maybe that's the uniform. But when you're out on the street and you're chasing bad guys, you don't want to be wearing stilettos, do you? But then that kind of made me think of Brian Bolland's Anderson, because he drew her with stilettos. So
it's very much like I feel like when you sort of come on to 2000 AD as an artist, you have to kind of like fill out some boxes about how you're going to draw things. And it's like, how many bars does Dredd's helmet have? Like how many links in the chain? What kind of shoes does Anderson wear? Every artist has to make these decisions and then stick with them, And sort of whether Anderson has high-heeled boots or not is very much one of those.
I'll also note that the film poster shows them wearing the sort of steel mesh protective suits that they wear to, protect them from the robot's lasers. But actually,
yeah, they present it as much more of a futuristic movie in the poster than it actually is.
And Tom Selleck puts that on for basically for one scene against a runaway robot early on.
And he's got Gene Simmons's robot gun in the picture as well. Although I thought this movie actually did a really good job of like creating like robots that looked like they were from the time, I guess. You know, like all the robots in this movie are very much like, you know, the fanciest microwave from 1985 with wheels attached to it, basically. And or from 1984, I should say. And I think I really like these sorts of like when people try to envision a future that looks like the future from the world they're living in. You know, it's not like this movie's about robots where everybody's wearing like silver jumpsuits and the robots are all like, you know, human beings or something like that. You know, they're very much like, what would happen if tech was like slightly more advanced from where we are in the current setting? You know, I think that those sorts of robot designs are interesting. Also, I want to point out another 2000 AD link, I guess, because I think that those little crawler robots like that he uses to kill people are really similar, or I think a lot of inspiration was taken in the first PJ Maybe story from Judge Dredd. He's also got this little scorpion bot that like kills people and stuff, and there's definitely I feel like there's a lot of design inspiration, or at least like crossover of like what does a bug robot look like between the ones in Runaway and what PJ Maybe uses.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I totally agree with you. It's set in the near future, the film, but it has an almost retro feel about it because it just looks like it's the 80s. The robots do look very low-tech, most of them, but the spider bots that you mentioned there, I thought they were very, very cool. They actually reminded me of Zoids.
Mm-hmm. I remember those two. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll mention that this is a film from 1984. Conrad, this is a running theme for the film club, set in 1991, the far future.
Hey, come on. Who could imagine? We could be doing anything by then,
and,
you know?
Yeah. And the deadly little spider bots kill you by injecting you with what's called in the film acid, but it then explodes. So I'm presuming, Conrad, that must be some form of...
It is danger acid, absolutely. You got to be careful.
Yeah, and then, of course, the other piece of tech in it was the gun with the smart bullet.
Yes.
And I remember as a kid seeing that at the Playhouse, and as soon as that bullet came out, and it was clearly a heat-seeker bullet, I remember just sitting in my seat getting really excited. It was like, it's a heat-seeker.
Yeah.
It's just dread. You know.
Absolutely.
I think there's probably... Although I selected it for its kind of parallels to Robo Hunter in that he's a cop that hunts robots. There's a lot of, you know, potential stuff where it's influenced possibly by Judge Dredd, or could have been. He has Tom Selleck's character has a house droid called Lois. This is kind of like a mashup of Walter and the landlady, the Italian
Maria,
landlady.
Yeah.
Maria, yeah.
And she's sort of occasionally amusing. There's also the amusing scene early on in the film where they're sent to deal with a runaway robot in a cornfield while the various farm workers just look around and laugh. And that's sort of played for some slight Robo Hunter humour. But apart from that...
Yeah.
It tends to get on with the serious, you know, danger plot of Dr. Luther and his deadly spider robots.
Yeah, and the exploding bullet as well, because it's the scene where the partner, Cynthia Rhodes' character, has this exploding bullet, and she's been shot and she's got this bullet in her, and then Tom Selleck has to defuse the bomb before it blows her leg off or whatever it is.
In classic movie hero style, he says he's going to turn off the droid, turn off the robot. I'm going to do this manually. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Always. I don't need no bot. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Also, say that he, in classic movie hero style, we learn fairly early on that he is afflicted with what the movies would call vertigo, a fear of heights. Which, of course, guess where the finale is going to be set. We can work that out in advance, can't we?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. You know, listen, you got to have that fatal flaw to overcome, you know.
That's right. That's how it propels you into the third act, isn't it? You know, you've got to test the character's flaw.
Ooh, they better not be high up. I'll be very cross if they are.
Written and directed by Michael Crichton, as a writer and a creator, let's say he did the Andromeda Strain, he did Coma, he of course would go on to become hugely successful with Jurassic Park. The sort of theme of technology gone bad, technology and the dangers of it, let's just say that's a sort of frequent theme for Michael Crichton, I would say.
Yeah, he did Westworld, didn't he?
Of course, there you go.
Yeah, which is that, you know, yeah, it's exactly that thing with the fear of technology. And that's kind of on sort of, you know, that's part of the 2000 AD zeitgeist as well, the sort of cynicism of the future.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he did a pretty good job at directing. There's some really fun parts in this film, just sort of from a technical standpoint, I guess. Like, Troy, you mentioned the heat-seeking bullets. And just that, like the first person, like when Gene Simmons shoots his like, you know, robot gun or whatever, you get this like first person perspective of the bullet as it like chases its target and stuff like that. And you get a lot of like, you know, going around corner, like, you know, camera on like a wire or something, going around corners, people looking at me like, like as they run and stuff. And I think that those are really neat effects. Similarly, there's a big car chase with like, little like road running robots that can sort of get dropped, and then you sort of see them like sort of a ground level camera like dodging between car tires and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're like those are radio controlled bombs or something, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Also, sort of presaging future technology, going after like an AirTag on Christy Alley's purse. But I thought those shots are really cool too. Like just sort of, I don't know, doing interesting stuff with the camera that, you know, it feels very ahead of its time, sort of similar to like, I don't know, like sort of some of the drone stuff we do, you see in like modern movies, but presumably just literally strapping a camera to a remote control car and hoping for the best, you know?
Yeah. I've just remembered what something else as well was that they've got actually have psychic cops, don't they? So they've got a Psy division.
That's true. That's so weird. Yes. That's such a 1984 rip from the headlines sort of thing. Like, consult with the psychic. God damn it.
Yeah, it just feels like it just feels almost inconceivable that they've not read 2000 AD and been influenced by it.
Mm.
Interesting. I wonder if Michael Crichton was ever a 2000 AD reader.
I mean,
well, he did rip off Flesh, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and literally Jurassic Park from Why There's Dinosaurs on the Cursed Earth in 2000 AD, the sort of there was a like brought back from via genetics to make a theme park in stuff like that. And then things go wrong, you know.
If he wasn't, he was certainly reading the same source material that Pat Mills and the others were.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the very least, drawing from the same well, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a film that not many people went to see, let's say that. Mm. Would we recommend this one to 2000 AD readers who may not have seen this at all? What did we think about it? How did we feel about this film? Conrad, it was your first time.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Like, you know, it's very, obviously, like if I was talking to like some of my friends, I'd sort of caution that, like, you know, yeah, it's from 1984. So it sort of has, you know, it is kind of at this point an older movie and sort of has like old movie beats basically and sort of isn't like rip roaring start to finish or like, I don't know, has some slow parts or something. But I thought it was really good. Definitely a great, like, just like 100, you know, hour and a half. Get some explosions, get some fun performances, get some interesting camera stuff. Like, I think it just sort of, you know, it's a movie that knows what it wants to do and just and accomplishes that. And, you know, that's hard to complain about, I guess.
Troy, how do you feel about this film and particularly for 2000 AD readers?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Conrad just said there. I think it's, you know, if you go into it with understanding that it is very much of its time. It's not a classic, so don't expect RoboCop or Blade Runner, but it is fun. And, you know, it's like a Saturday afternoon matinee or something like that. You stick it on for an hour and a half and just be entertained. And it does have a great cast. You know, as you say, like even Kirstie Alley's in it, who's like a staple of the 80s. It feels almost like you can't have the 80s without Kirstie Alley in it.
Yeah, yes. I guess this would be a couple of years after she appeared in Rapid
Yeah, it's
Car.
A post. It's yeah, post Star Trek, pre Cheers, right, basically.
Okay. her career, post Star Trek, pre Cheers, right? Anything else from your notes about this film, Troy? As you suggested these for us,
I think I've sort of covered it all. Really, just
it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. The action feels. Certainly by today's standards feels very low stakes. You know, it's, you know, the way all the Marvel films, everything, you know, third act is something massive comes out of the sky and the world's going to be destroyed. Right. If the heroes, you know, it's nothing like that. It's just, you know, it's just a bad guy who gets punched in the face at the end. Well, not quite, but you know what I mean? I think for 2000 AD fans, as I say, there's as much fun in spotting the coincidental references as there is in the film itself.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, I would agree. It's a good, fun one. It's nice to see some of these parallels with 2000 AD stories, Robo Hunter, Dread, and some of the others as well. Yeah, great fun for a film that nobody saw at the time, it would seem. Sadly, didn't launch Tom Selleck into that huge film career, but he did very well on TV. And as you said, Conrad, he's got the Three Men and the Baby movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's done all right.
Yeah, he's fine. Tom Selleck has nothing to complain about. He's had, you know, 300 episodes of Blue Bloods or whatever. You know, he's working, he's eating fine. Don't worry about Tom Selleck.
And of course, one of
powerful mustache.
Exactly.
You know?
One of the all time great mustaches. A lot of talk in recent years about Ted Lasso's mustache, but in the 1980s, there was only one mustache that ruled the world.
Yeah.
And it was on the face of Magnum PI himself. Yeah. Okay, let us turn from a film that very few people have seen to a film that I'm going to say everybody has seen. Conrad, take us into
Film 2, E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
1982, everybody knows it's directed by Steven Spielberg, written by Melissa Mathison, starring Henry Thomas, Peter Coyote, Dee Wallace, Drew Barrymore. We'll just say that this one did make its money back and all the other money as well. Troy, take us into this one, the briefest of synopsis, and particularly why this one relates to 2000 AD.
Yeah, okay, so if anyone who's been living under a rock for the past 40 years, E.T., the extraterrestrial, a alien creature from another planet, is stranded on Earth and hides in a boy's garage. And then hijinks ensue as the kids try to hide him from the adults and stop him from being captured by the government. The reason I picked this one is because I think, you know, it's obvious that E.T. was the main inspiration for Alan Moore and Jim Baker's Skiz, which, you know, is an all-time 2000 AD classic.
Absolutely.
Just quickly, can you tell us about your first experiences watching E.T.? When did you see it, Troy?
Well, I saw it at the cinema with my parents. I think my mum took me to see it. So I would have been about 9 or 10 at the time. So I was, you know, absolutely the target audience for that film, and I absolutely adored it. And I had an E.T. doll, and I had an E.T. poster, and E.T. sticker albums, and E.T. this and E.T. that, and you know, I was all over it at the time.
Conrad?
I was a little bit too young for when it first came out. I think I was like 3 or something like that when it first came out, and so I think I probably saw it on like either the VHS, like on the video release, or maybe on TV or something. It's one that doesn't hold actually, like, as opposed to our RoboCop episode where I can tell you exactly where I was when I first saw it. E.T. was more sort of one of those movies that, because it was so popular, it almost become part of like the zeitgeist almost. Like, it was just sort of like, you know, you knew everything about it. I do remember like seeing like the commercial for, or like stand-in ups in, or like basically like a cardboard things that are sort of advertising like the VHS release in like videos in like convenience stores when I was a kid. And that was a very big deal, you know? But yeah, I forget exactly when I first saw it. Must've been the mid 80s though.
Okay. Troy, like yourself, I went to see it in the cinema. I mean, I'm older, but I did also go with my mom, and I did do the actual queuing round the block. This was my sort of first experience
nice.
Of a literal blockbuster. That, you know, this was the film that people queued to get into to go and see, and the cinemas were all packed. There wasn't a spare seat in the cinema. Everybody was going to see E.T.
You're right. I'd forgotten about that, actually. Where I grew up in Harlow, the cinema was in the town centre, and I remember the queues for E.T. They weren't just queuing outside the cinema. They were queuing past the Citizens Advice Centre and into the Market Square. So it's like literally queuing through the entire town centre.
So I want to talk a little bit about dates, because E.T., as I understand it, premiered in the U.S. in June 1982. In December 1982, it reaches the UK, when that period when, you know, films would start at different dates in different countries. Skiz, of course, starts in Prague 308 in March 1983. And I'm going to guess it's probably written between the US and the UK release of E.T., because we know Alan Moore had not seen E.T. at all when he'd written it. He may not have seen it because he doesn't go to movies, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, even curmudgeonly, even so early in his career, you know.
Conrad, of course, you and Fox have covered Skiz on.
Yeah, we've covered all three Skizzes.
Right.
I think we're still working on our coverage on that in our current episode, but we've completed it in our recordings at the very least. But yeah.
And if I could say that, you know, particularly for your co-host Fox, Skiz is one of the great moments, the high points of 2000 AD.
Oh yeah, me too. Like Skiz is a comic that if you ask me what are the top 2000 AD stories, Skiz is right, you know, is up there. I mean, like all of Alan Moore's stuff in 2000 AD, a lot of it's really good, whether it's Future Shocks, Halo Jones, of course. But Skiz is one that, like, you know, is, I think in some people's power rankings a little lower, but one I've always loved. You know, that final line, some of them are stars in the first Skiz story always, you know, gets me a little bit, you know.
Yes.
And yeah, and it's very much, yeah, and I know for Fox, definitely, he loves Skiz too, and we're it's one that, yeah, we think about a lot, for sure. Hold to heart, you know.
Troy, taking the idea of an extraterrestrial and putting it landing in Birmingham and with a sort of Boys from the Black Stuff television sort of cast, it is a very powerful 2000 AD story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I this might be controversial, but I would go as far as to say that I think actually Skiz is a better story than E.T. But it is very much like E.T. if it was made by Alan Bleasdale. So it's much bleaker, much more less glamorous. You know, the characters are much more sort of grounded and believable. You know, obviously Alan Moore's made the main character in Skiz a teenage female rather than a young boy. But yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. Yeah, Skiz, I think, is a great story and a very emotional story, whereas E.T. is a fun film, but I don't think it's as good a story as Skiz, actually.
Well, E.T., as we know, was a phenomenon. Everybody was going to see it from its budget of $10 million to a box office of somewhere near $800 million. Spielberg expertly handled or, you know, directed his young cast. I think, you know, the kids are fantastic in it. The effects still hold up. You know, the deciding to do E.T. as practical effect, I think, works.
Oh, yeah. I mean, watching this in the high def, you know, of a modern TV and stuff, I was really just marveling at just all the little pieces of articulation and stuff in like E.T.'s head. You know, you really like just how he's got all these little like pieces that are sort of like popping around and stuff like that. Like, and you can sort of bring about the emotions in this weird puppet, I think is really interesting.
possibly over the years, I'm going to say, well, let's say this, over the years, possibly E.T. has got the reputation has slightly changed, that some people might think it's a little bit too sentimental. So here we are, three fully grown-ups now, going back to watch E.T. What did we make of the rewatch, Troy?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I watched it for the first time in a long time and I enjoyed it. It is a great film. But, you know, like similar films from that time, so you watch Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jaws, anything like that, you still get the impression that you're watching a pivotal moment in cinematic history. It still feels like a big deal, whereas E.T., which was a big deal at the time, doesn't feel like that is continued to echo throughout time. It feels dated now to me. It doesn't feel like it's as influential a film as I remembered it as being.
Conrad, what did you make of it going back to watch it last night?
I mean, I was really, I think it's one of these things where it's like it's a situation where sometimes things can be so influential that it sort of lessens them almost, like how the kids interact, or like the John Williams score, right? Mm. These are things that in 2024 are like such a part of, like, I don't know, like Western culture, you know? Yeah. Or like just like what we do. It just what is a movie now, you know, that I think it's easy to take for granted what makes the original such like so powerful and so important in its time, you know. And I agree that I didn't get a chance. I want to talk to some of my younger friends who, you know, who might be like in their 20s or something and be like, what do you think about like have you seen E.T. first of all, just because, you know, as much as we've been living under a rock, like a lot of these kids haven't seen old movies, and for better or for worse, E.T. is a 42-year-old movie, you know. But also just like, you know, if you've seen it, like, does it mean anything to you? Like, or has it just been like, have the last four decades of like family movies that are so directly, like, if not literally like borrowing from E.T., still influenced by the themes and how things work and how things look from that movie specifically, from Spielberg generally, you know, it's so influential that just it sort of has like lost some things because so much of it's in everything else that we see in like, you know, for the last several decades, you know.
Yeah, it feels like whenever these days when anyone makes like an 80s nostalgia film, a series like Stranger Things, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's almost like the producers of that watched E.T. and Goonies and nothing else.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's very much, E.T. with Goonies is one of these archetypal kids on bikes sort of settings and stuff like that, you know.
Yes.
And just like, having like, here's the wacky hijinks, the product placement,
talking of product placement, Star Wars figures are all over this film.
Right. And like, again, I always go back to just the score again, because it's so like... You know, I feel like I know exactly what, like, I haven't seen this movie in like 20 years or in a very long time either, but I like knew exactly what like the beats were going to be in the score and stuff like that, you know, just from like, I don't know, again, like just the culture, like part of me, like this sort of like, you know, that's just how it's supposed to be, you know? And I think that, you know, again, it's easy to see it. Like, it makes sense that it's sort of like, not that great, but instead sort of so influential almost that we can't see it anymore. You know, it's like that, like that's how big it is almost.
It's a little bit like if you were sitting down or sitting somebody else down to watch Citizen Kane or Hitchcock's Vertigo for the first time, knowing that these are, you know, some of the most influential movies of all time.
Right. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Eamon, I'm sorry.
No, it's just that, isn't it? I mean, if you sit somebody down to watch Runaway, you don't have any particular expectations. You say, this is going to be just fun. Mm. But if you're watching Citizen Kane, Vertigo, Psycho, or E.T., You know these films come with such a reputation in advance.
Right. Or like, not to get too heady, but like with like Hamlet or something where it's just all cliche, you know, watching it now, you can see, it's like all cliches,
yes,
you know?
Exactly.
And it's like these, this is where like the cliches come from,
yeah.
You know, like that sort of thing, I guess.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think its influence on popular culture is, you know, is undeniable, but I think it's cinematic influence as a medium of visual storytelling, I don't think it holds up against
Raiders
of the Lost Ark or Close Encounters, you know, the other Spielberg classics from that time.
Yeah, so I don't want to seem like I'm disagreeing with you, Troy. I agree for sure that, like, you know, you watch it now, like, I think it's really easy to watch it now and kind of be like, well, okay, like, it's fine, you know, but like not like super mind blowing or anything like that. And I just wanted to mention, just to sort of be like, you know, part of why it feels so like, so why it doesn't feel so gripping like that, I guess, is just because it's been sort of smoothed out over everything we see almost. It's a weird, it's an interesting thing to think about, I guess, is sort of like, I mean, and it's because it was so successful, like in the end, like if some movie becomes the highest grossing movie for seeming like what felt like for all time, but for like, you know, 10 years or something, obviously everyone who makes a movie is going to be like, well, how can we ET this just a little bit, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That, as you say, Conrad, that view of suburban America, the kids, the bikes, the Dungeons and Dragons game, the music, it all became very familiar to us from then on. But as you say, in a way, this is the film that did that first, isn't it? And sort of introduced
I know us. I've talked to several English people who have said that like trick-or-treating in England is basically credited to E.T.
Yes.
That like you guys didn't have it until people had seen this movie. Like, wait a minute, we could be getting candy here? What's going on?
Like, we can dress up and people will give us candy? Great. Yeah. So Troy has introduced the idea, which I'm going to then ask to Conrad and myself. Which is the better story now? Is it Skiz or E.T.? Troy, you've already sort of nailed your colours to the mast. You think Skiz stands up better and has passed the test of time. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. I think, like, E.T., as I say, it is a great film. It is, you know, it's fun to watch. I think there are some pacing issues. I think the second act it gets bogged down on too many silly shenanigans and kind of slows the pace in the film down a little bit. And then the third act comes out of nowhere. The boy opens the door and the government are everywhere. And suddenly we're in the third act and the stakes have shifted dramatically and it just comes out of nowhere. So I think in terms of storytelling, it has some flaws. Whereas I feel like Skiz, which I reread just last year, I think, still feels like a very, very good story, and I think it gets its point across better than E.T. does.
Conrad, which one's stood the test of time better?
I mean, I like, man, I mean, I mostly agree. Actually, I think I like Skiz a little bit more. Maybe just my 2080 Homerism here. But like, I really, you know, Skiz tries to, like, it's, I think it's really interesting just to see the contrasts, I guess. This sort of, you know, urban Birmingham, England versus California suburbia. I think it's interesting how the government's different, I guess, as well. Like Van Owen, this evil South African dude in Skiz versus the frankly kind of sympathetic Peter Coyote in E.T. You know, he talks about how like Peter Coyote's character, to the extent that he has characterization, I guess, is just briefly sort of just talking about how, like, he too has the wonderment of E.T. and, like, wishes he had been Elliot, basically. As opposed to Van Owen, who I think is, while, of course, you know, as, you know, the most evil of evil dudes, like, still, like, creates more of an antagonist, I guess. Like, you know, and I think that well, both in that the like the heist to free the alien, I think, is a little like is more fun in Skiz, where it's sort of the whole community coming together and all that kind of stuff to kind of like, you know, break this alien out of jail, versus like, you know, a little bit of sort of the Deus back here, like sort of, oh yeah, no, E.T.'s magic. So that's just sort of how it goes, you know. Also, like, I don't know, like your mileage may vary on like resurrection themes and stuff like that. Like if you want E.T. to be Jesus, like, you know, that's cool. I'm not against it. But, you know, it also feels like, well, why did he come back? Like, I don't know. Like, what changed about Elliot's love for E.T. to bring him back to life versus that caused him to die? I guess, I don't know, you know, I don't know. Obviously, like, the character of Roxy is a little bit more, like, a teenage girl is more complex than, like, a 9-year-old boy. That's just math. Like, I don't know what to tell you, you know? Yeah, there's a little bit more like, I don't know, like flavor or like extra stuff in Skiz that I think makes it an interesting story. And I think one that, you know, obviously, as 2000 AD heads have all read it, but one that would make me recommend Skiz to people, just be like, here's like a different way of seeing E.T., a different way of looking at it that I think makes it really interesting because it's... You know, because it's not the one of the bedrock culture parts of, you know, of our lives, you know. I don't know.
Well, Troy has asked this very interesting question or raised this controversial point, but I'm going to agree with him as well. I think that Skiz stands up better over the period of time than E.T. does. That may just be familiarity with E.T. breeding a certain amount of contempt because we've all seen it so many times, or if not, we've seen individual parts of it so many times, you know. But yeah, interesting stuff. And in a parallel universe where Tom Selleck is Indiana Jones, perhaps Alan Moore followed the British invasion and actually went to Hollywood and wrote movies instead of comic books. What films they would have been.
Movies he liked, yeah. I guess.
Great stuff. Any other thoughts or points about either of these films before we wrap it up, gentlemen?
Yeah, just with E.T., just wanted to point out a couple of noteworthy cameos in it from young actors. So C. Thomas Howe is one of the boy gang in it, one of Michael's friends, has a few lines. And obviously he went on to, you know, I think probably his biggest film is The Hitcher, but he was part of the Rat Pack. And the scene in the classroom when E.T. gets drunk and then Elliot gets drunk and all chaos is kicking off in the classroom, the girl in that he kisses is Erica Alaniak, who's more famous for bursting topless out of a birthday cake in Under Siege.
Yeah, Die Hard in a Boat, hey. Absolutely. Yeah.
If you're playing the drinking game at home, everybody take a drink. Yeah, fantastic. I did notice those this time, that they did stand. Yeah, very good.
And I suppose it's just worth mentioning just how great Drew Barrymore was in this film.
I think it's an astonishing performance by Drew Barrymore. How Steven Spielberg and the rest managed to get her to do that is just astonishing. It's amazing work. I mean, the kid actors are great, but Drew Barrymore really stood out to me this time as just... And it's amazing child performance.
Absolutely, you know, so much fun. And like again, I really love just that everything they do with that E.T. puppet is really great and just like feels fun. Like, I don't know, when on the E.T. sides of that classroom scene, I've just got a love of just like fully retracted, like short little guy E.T. like walking around like this. That's funny, man. I don't know. Like, that's a cool part for the character. And
getting knocked over by the fridge door.
Exactly. And then when Elliot comes home and E.T.'s wearing the dress and stuff like that. That was funny stuff. You know, simple, but like, you know, like made me laugh. And that's just sort of what we're looking for these movies.
Great stuff, gents. Well, Troy, thank you very much for suggesting two films for the film club to look at. We would say to listeners, go and have a look at Runaway, have a reread of Skiz, go back and listen to the Space Spinner 2000 collection about Skiz. I think there's a collection, is there?
I'll put one out soon, okay. Probably, especially once we finish the once we finish Volume 3, I'll probably do just a complete Skiz, just to kind of have them all in one place.
Something to look out for. Great stuff.
You did Skiz on the book club, didn't you?
We did, yeah. With Fox himself, yeah. Yes. Yeah. You can go back and listen to that one as well. Fox will listen to Fox wax lyrical about Birmingham Came Running.
Yeah, I remember.
Love to talk. Yeah, listen, it's Skiz is so fun. Definitely always worth a look. And, you know, like, hey, like, listen, I'm not going to, no needs to plug E.T. It's fine.
Yeah,
like, watch E.T. it if you want. Yeah. Like, if you've got a kid, maybe have your kid watch E.T., see what they think about it. I mean, I'd be interested to hear what a younger generation like thinks about it, or what, like, who's grown again, what I've been talking about this whole time, who's grown up with the background of E.T., what they think of the actual thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Right. Let's just say where we can find each other on the net. You can find all my links at megacitybookclub.com and all the episodes are there. Conrad?
Space Spinner 2000, Big Meg 1, we do 2000 AD and Judge Red Magazine recap podcasts, man. We're finishing up 1994 on to 1995, where as film club news, there might be another movie coming out. You know, ominous foreshadowing, be careful.
1995 science fiction film. Yeah, okay.
What could it be?
Troy, where can we find yourself?
So my fitness account, which is nothing to do with this, but my fitness account is on Instagram is TMFitnessUK, or you can find me as Sweet Nightmares Media, also on Instagram, and we have a Substack as well.
And am I right, Troy, that you've just written something for Commando?
Yeah, well, I wrote it a while ago, but yeah, it's just come out, so that's on the shelves at the moment. So if you go down to your local WH Smith's or McColl's, you can pick up a copy of Leg Before Chindits.
Excellent. And this this episode will be coming out next Sunday, so that will still hopefully be on the Smith shelf.
Well, hopefully, yeah, if there's any left.
Good. head to your nearest Smith's and get the latest Commando, which has got Troy's story in it, and I shall pop down there myself tomorrow and see if I can find one.
Excellent, thank you.
Great stuff. Well, at this point I say, if you have a film that you can link to 2000 AD, if no one can help, and if you can find us, then you too can join the film club. I had to take out the word hire because Conrad...
It's free. You know, stop. Yeah. Like, you go to the email address. Like, let's talk about these movies. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm always looking for excuses.
Suggest a film or two and come and talk to me and Conrad about movies. So that's it. Until next time, I've been Eamon.
I'm Conrad.
I'm Troy.
And we have been
Mega City Film Club.
All right.